visits a local middle school to promote drug awareness.
We have a very special surprise today. Let's hear it for Tyrone Beckham!
Hi, kids. Thank you very much, teacher. It is truly an honor and a privilege for me to be here at Pinehurst School, or whatever your school is called today. I say it's a privilege because it's a violation of my parole to be around children. But enough about that. Hello, little boys and little girls. Kids, y'all are looking at a dead man. I should not be in front of you today. Drugs and alcohol have ruined my life.
Little Tyrone Biggums for you people. How are we doing out there tonight in the great land of YouTube and all streaming platforms? Welcome to the MCU's Bleeding Edge. We are live Friday night. We'll be discussing the DC Universe animated film, Batman Gotham Knight. So this is the third film in the releasing of the DC animated films. Came out in 2008. It's cut up into six different segments. And is basically an anthology film for you guys out there. It was produced by several different studios. It was put out by Warner Brothers, but it did have production by other studios as well. They each did a specific different type of art and art form in their each of their segments. And each little story is an interweaving story with Batman involved. Now, like we said, we've been going over these, wonderful animated films that DC has put out, which they've always been really solid. They've always been done really well. And this is, no exception to that. The stories themselves, I feel, are really done well. But all the artwork in it, I'm not necessarily a huge fan of Japanese-style artwork. I'm not a huge manga fan. I'm not a huge anime fan, I should say. So I didn't care too much for a few of the different segments of the artwork that they did, especially the very first segment. I didn't care too much for how it looked. I just felt it looked like somebody threw something together and put it up on the screen. I know a lot of people probably going to disagree with that. They're probably going to say, oh, it's so amazing and wonderful. Well, that's your opinion. Hence why I'm saying this is my opinion. But anyways, like I said, this is cut up into six segments, which each have a different title. And like I said, this is also the third film in the DC animated universe. So we're going to go around the table here just to start us off and get everyone's kind of impressions going into this movie. Like, think of your thoughts before you actually saw it and basically kind of give your thoughts on what were you expecting when you went into watching this film. And let's just say you didn't watch it back in 2008 when it came out. Say it was a few years after even. It doesn't matter when you watched it. Just your thoughts on when you were going into watching this. If you have a knowledge of the comics a little bit, that's great too. If that puts into play what you're thinking about and all that kind of good stuff. So we're going to go around the table and do that. Starting with you, Andrew, what were your thoughts going into this film? Did you have any thoughts, or was it just kind of like a blank slate?
It was a blank slate because I didn't know it was an anthology type movie going into. So also, I like that fact because you don't get a lot of those these days. But each one has a specific story and a style, like you said. You know, it's something you don't get a lot with stuff these days. And how would I say it? You know, like, as I was watching it, I was slightly impressed, you know, like you said, there's a couple styles, you know, it's like, that one was all right. But, you know, majority of it was good. And then, but the way I like about it is, if you were to do each of those in a specific, like, full-length feature, it'd be very boring. But since, you know, you get the, like, 15 minutes of it, they get right to the core of what the subject is, of what they're trying to go for. So you get all the action, you get the gist of it in a short amount of time, and I think they did that very well.
Excellent. So. Awesome. Thank you. Johnny, your thoughts going into it, sir?
So I saw this when it first came out. I remember it like it was yesterday. We just got out of church and we saw the dude who sold movies for $5 that were still in theaters. So we went ahead and bought this, and I was 10 at the time. So I saw Batman. And I was like, oh my God, it's Batman. So I ended up grabbing it, paying $5. And I put it in thinking like it was going to be like the animated series, that it was not made for adults. So it was kind of surprising. And honestly, some of the stories were pretty good. And yeah, no, the first one was definitely very interesting the first time I saw it, because I wasn't used to anime. So it was definitely kind of reminding me of Avatar, The Last Airbender. Personally, my favorite one, I want to say, was the second one with the Arkham and Detective... I forgot her name. But anyway, that personally was my favorite. Just going in and watching it years later as I'm older, it's just incredible seeing these things, especially knowing that these take place within the Christopher Nolan universe. That it's not a part of its own thing, that it's just little tidbits growing the universe itself.
Very true. Yes, it is. Yes, that is correct. It is a part of the Nolan universe, loosely on the Nolan universe, because a couple of the segments are supposed to be pre-Batman Begins. So there's definitely some connection to the Nolan universe, most definitely. They also said that there is some connection to the Animatrix as well, because the same company that put out the Animatrix also worked on this as well. And so they gave the nickname Batamatrix. Was loosely tied to that as well. Yes, hello, Jocelyn. Welcome to the show. Thank you for being in the comments. And we're talking Batman Gotham Knight, which is an animated film that came out on DVD and VHS back in 2008. No, I think it was just DVD by that time. Blu-ray probably. Yeah, because 2006 was when VHS went out of stock. Anyways, welcome to the thing, Jazz. Thank you, Jocelyn. Thank you for being in the comments. All right. So, going to you, Mr. Moderator, co-host man. Your thoughts going into this film.
Hey, don't be like alluding to me being a moderator anyway here and whatnot. I don't want to be having any Alexis, you know, moments here and whatnot where we're going to start out moderating each other and shit during the show, because we know how that went the last time, so... I don't think we should go that way, Cyber. It didn't work out so good. Unless you want to try it out, you want to dual moderate the show.
You're sometimes a moderator. That's what I was referring to, sir.
I know that. I'm kidding, sir. I'm kidding. I didn't know what to fucking expect. No, I didn't know what to fucking expect, man. Honestly, I don't believe in doing research before watching these films before I review them. I think it sort of contradicts giving like an authentic reaction to the you know, the story or whatever, or what's presented to me. The more preparation I do and invest myself into actually like knowing more information about it tangibly when I walk into it, the more authentic it is presented to me the first time when I see it. And again, you have to remember, I've never seen the majority of all these films, so every time I'm seeing it, it's the first time I'm seeing it, right? I've only really watched a few of the DC animated films, and they're the newer ones from the last couple of years. The first one I ever watched was, Apocalypse War or whatever. That was the one that brought me in. That one I actually realized, oh shit, DC animated films is no joke. This is some serious shit. You know what I'm saying? That movie like fucking shook me for a minute, man. I was amazed at how good it was. And how adult it was. Right? But I had no idea what to expect. I had no idea it was going to be subdivided into six categories like that, or six different sequences. That's an awesome angle. I love it. The only thing I can compare it to would be like, what was that? What was that Tarantino film in the early 90s? With Tim Roth? Fiction? No, before that.
Reservoir Dogs?
No, the one where it's three or four different stories throughout the movie.
Pulp Fiction?
No, before that, he did one. He before Pulp Fiction.
That's Four Rooms.
Yeah. Bruce Willis. Four Rooms. Yeah, with Bruce Willis and Tim Roth and.
That was Pulp Fiction.
That's not Pulp Fiction. Yep. Oh, you're right.
John Travolta, Samuel Jackson?
No. I'm talking about Four Rooms or Three Rooms, whatever it is, where it is
Four Rooms. It's called Four Rooms. Tim Roth is in it. Bruce Willis is not.
Oh, he's not?
No.
Okay. Four Rooms. Is it not broken up into different stories throughout the story?
Kind of.
Yeah. Based off of Tim Roth. He's like the main character.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it's similar to this. It's the only thing I can think of that's similar to this. And I got like what if vibes to this a little bit too. I did. It kind of gave me like some what if vibes, if that makes sense. Just by, I guess maybe the animation a little bit. They really, 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 really upped the animation level game big time from the last one we did, Justice League, New Frontier. Was that it? Justice League, New Frontier? Mm-hmm. To this one? Holy shit. Did they elevate their animation game? I mean, I thought they did. It could just be me. The story writing I thought was great. Excellent story writing. But then again, you know, I thought about it. One thing I can tell you is that it never occurred to me until I watched this. Batman has got to be such an easy character to write for, right? He's so awesome. He's such a dope character, man. Like, he's so cool. You know, like that really, I mean, if you give him anything halfway decent to say, he can fucking, he pulls it off. It's good. So I'm just saying it's got to be like a dream job to be able to write for Batman, right? But at the same time, too, probably a big, you know, you probably feel a lot of pressure, you know, with a character like that to write for Batman. At the same time, you know, look, you know, you don't want Batman to look bad. So yeah, I mean, I didn't really know what to expect with a title like, Gotham Knight. I just assumed it was going to be a dark, gritty, solo Batman animated film where he was going to fight probably one of his old villains or whatever, some shit, fight crime, and that was going to be the movie.
Excellent, thank you. All right, so this movie actually has a really great voice cast. We had the late, great Kevin Conroy voicing Batman throughout the whole entire film. But we also had the pleasure of Rob Paulsen, Corey Burton, Yolanda Allback, providing voices, Will Friedle from Boy Meets World. They all have provided voiceovers for different characters throughout the segments and stuff like that. And like I said, this has six segments that each of them have their own title. So we're going to start off with the first one, which is called I Have a Story to Tell. And basically the segment is about these four kids that are like skateboarders. And basically each of them tell a story about their introduction to Batman, basically seeing him in person. And kind of like each one that gets a little crazier and a little different throughout the little episode or segment. And, you know, at one point he looks like he's a shadow. Another point he looks like he's a bat. Another one it's like he's like almost like robotic. I mean, it's all these different types of little crazinesses to what Batman, they think Batman looks like or how he presented himself. One of the girls kind of exaggerated, saying that he killed one of the characters that he was going against when he really didn't. And it just was a great story. I just didn't care too much for the animation. I thought the animation in this was just really weird looking. And also at the same time, it just looked like it was scribbled together. It didn't look like actual animation to me. And I just thought that still overall, it was a really great concept and story. These, you know, four kids telling their story of their encounters. Because by the end of the little segment, Batman actually pops up where they are, and they one of them assists in helping him to stop the bad guy that he was going after. So really little cool little segment. Just the animation to me was weird. But overall, I thought it was a really good segment. So let's go around the panel and see what everyone else thought about this segment. Going into the animation, the voiceovers, the story. What did you think about that, and did you enjoy it? I started with you, Andrew.
Yeah, you said the animation style was odd. Like, I haven't really seen – I can't think of something else that I've seen that was, like, that kind of style exactly. You know, so for the fact that it was weird and it was more original in the sense of that. But for each story, yeah, it was really interesting to see how they each perceived what they thought Batman really is. You know, like you said, like at the end, he came in, the kid hit him in the head with the skateboard. Batman's like, yeah, I owe you one. But yeah, like you said, when he was a robot, he looked all kind of like fat. Puffy, and I was like, man, I've never seen that before. That didn't look right. But it's just, you know, the imagination of children and how they like to exaggerate to make their story cooler than the others. But
most definitely.
Anyway, did you recognize the bad guy? I didn't recognize who that could have been, like what part of a...
I think it was just some random, like, dude that was, like, supposed to be a criminal, a mobster, and there. I don't think it was anybody specifically, like from a Batman villain. Yeah, I think he was just some sort of mobster that was from Gotham. They didn't even give him a name in the actual casting, I don't believe. Let's see here. I think they just called him Man in Black.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of like a foot soldier from Ninja Turtles.
There you go. Yep. That's true. Yep, most definitely. All right, thank you. Johnny, same question to you, sir.
So I really did like the segment, and I'm actually going to disagree with you about the animation. I think it worked really well because, of course, when it comes to kids, their minds go everywhere. Their perception is a lot different. And I think it actually worked really well, especially when it came to the robot making it look like freaking RoboCop, or when it came to the vampire or the shadow. It just, you just saw what the kids saw and how fast it was going. I think it was like the kids seeing this supernatural or robotic entity that they've never seen before. And I thought it was pretty clever, instead of having Batman chase the Man in Black throughout the entire episode or entire segment, you had these kids talking about seeing this dude throughout the entire city, what they saw. One thing I will say is the fact that it's kind of sad saying the late Kevin Conroy, because still can't believe he's gone. But like I said, I thought it was really great. The voice acting was fantastic. One thing that was very interesting was the fact that none of the segments showed human. None of the segments showed him as like human or hope. They all just saw the fear. They all just saw the darkness, or like, and just this entity in itself. So that's one thing I found interesting. None of them saw a man in a mask, which is probably what Batman wanted.
All right. Thank you. Excellent. Jeff, same question, sir. Your thoughts on that segment, sir?
Well, it didn't really do shit for me, to be honest with you. I could have cared less for it. It was the least impactful segment out of the entire thing for me. And I felt very detached from it. It really just was not up my alley at all. I didn't get any kind of... I just felt no connection to it whatsoever. I didn't find it entertaining. I didn't understand why it almost seemed like there were two versions of Batman during it almost at different times. I didn't really get it. And maybe this had to do with the fact that this was the opening of it. And again, without having done any research at all, I didn't even realize it was going to be broken up into pieces. So I was like, are you got to be kidding me? You're telling me that this entire film is going to be like this? This is what I'm going to be watching for an hour and 15 minutes? I was like, oh man, this is going to be rough. You know? Like, seriously, I was like, this is not going to be fun. Because, I mean, I don't know. The whole dynamic of the kids telling the story and whatnot and everything, just like I said, it didn't do anything for me. The recollections and whatnot and all that. I've seen, again, this is where the what-if stuff came in. Every time I saw, this part, and then the part where Scarecrow's involved and Killer Croc, and you get the toxin involved, the Scarecrow toxin shit and whatnot involved. Every time I saw anything like that where there was distortion and things were like animated in a more like evil, like, you know, horror kind of way, it just reminded me more and more and more of like What If and like the Zombies episodes, right? That's all I thought of the whole time. Was that comparison. With the animation, I guess, that's the only thing I could find, you know, in it that I found, I guess, interesting maybe. But I could not maintain cohesively exactly what the hell the kids were trying to say or talk about really across the span of what they were talking about and doing. It was kind of confusing to me. It was a little bit too multi-layered for me, I guess. There was a lot going on. I didn't know who the villain was again. Like you said, I didn't know who that was. I was like, what the hell is that? Is that like a villain I don't know about? I don't know about because of my lack of knowledge. I'd never heard of him. I couldn't tell if there were multiple ones of him that just wore the same suit or something like that. That were, you know, and that I couldn't tell. So I found it confusing.
All right. So just to kind of help you reevaluate that segment. So basically the kids were each telling their story of their encounter with Batman.
Yes.
And they were showing the segments of what they are talking about. That's what all four of the little segments in that one segment was about. And then the final segment of that episode or that little section was when Batman really shows up and shows us what Batman really is like. Just to kind of reevaluate and bring you there. So
no, anyway. And I appreciate that. I kind of got the gist of that that's what it was and whatnot and everything, but I appreciate you elaborating that and articulating that.
All right. So, Jocelyn, you said you guys remember Batman Forever back in 1998, I think. It did not come out in 1998. It came out in 1995, directed by Joel Schumacher. Yes, I do remember Batman Forever. It's one of my favorites. Absolutely love what Schumacher did with that film. I love Jim Carrey, Tommy Lee Jones. Everyone that was in that film was just fantastic. I know everyone's like, oh, the Nolan films are the best. Yeah, you know, the Nolan films are good. They have some, you know, bite to them. They have some really good cleverness to them. They are very good, especially The Dark Knight. Number two out of that trilogy is the best, I think, of that series. And but yeah, I think Batman Forever is a treasure, a gem. I think that movie is absolutely fantastic. So yeah, we do remember that, Jocelyn. Thank you for bringing that up. It's a great movie. All right. So, Jeff, you have the trailer, sir.
I do.
How about we play that for these fine folks out there to show them what we're talking about?
No problem. It's a good trailer, too.
I'm willing to put my life on the line to do what I have to. But it has to be mine, no one else's.
There you go, baby.
There we go, people. A little refresher course for you guys. Oh, yeah. Woo-hoo.
When did the trailer release?
It released in... One second, Johnny. It released in 9 years ago. So, let's see. 9 years ago from right now would be what?
2014.
2016.
Yeah.
14? Okay.
14.
Yeah. And I'll look real quick and see. Let me see if there's another trailer. No, that's it. It's just that.
Okay. All right. So, yeah, there's a great little refresher for you guys. And that is a Gotham Knight Batman. All right. Yes, yes. All right. So moving on to the next segment, which was called Crossfire. Now, this one definitely it reinvigorated me when this popped up because I thought the animation was a little better. I enjoyed it a little bit more because the animation was better. And I definitely thought that this was another interesting segment. Like I said, I think all six segments are really great writing, really greatly planned out, and I thought they were just a really cool stories. But this one was interesting because this one is when we get our first introduction to Jim Gordon in the this animated film, and we're shown two of his like top kind of detectives, and basically they're sent on a mission to investigate these people that are out doing a deal of some sort. And when they get there, basically all hell breaks loose, and we have kind of a war going on, and they're all being shot out and shot at and trying to be killed and stuff like this. And basically, at some point, that's when Batman pops up to save the day. And I thought that they did a good job with the action in the sequences. I liked how they had, Batman come in and how they had his presence really cool. Like, they made him very shadowy in this segment. And I thought overall it was a really interesting and fun segment that I thought really captured kind of the essence of, the sleuthing part of Batman and kind of his, his in the shadow moments, really. And I thought they did a good job with that. All right. So what are your guys' thoughts on this segment? What did you enjoy about it? What did you take out of it? Do any of you know who these two cops are that they had in this segment? Because I didn't see anything familiar from these characters. When I looked them up and stuff, they just were some random characters. And just what were your guys' overall thoughts on this segment? And how would you compare it to the last segment?
Did
you
Cyber, see Cyber, they're Crispus Allen and Anna Ramirez.
Yep.
Okay. And and what did, how did you feel it compared to the last episode? Starting with you, Andrew.
Starting with Anna Ramirez, which is nice because she's actually in the new Batman Gotham Knights game. You help her take down corrupt police officers' traditions in the game, which was cool. Like you said, there was finally some good action in there. It kept me entertained. Just the way Batman came in, he just kicked ass and did what he did best. He used them against each other, basically. Was trying to stop them from both sides. And then, what was it? Maroni tried using them as a Salvatore is like as a hostage. That Batman was just easily to get around that, knocked him out. Saving the day like he does best. But how else? Like you said, the animation definitely was a little better on this one. It was more the style I do like when it comes to that. With the style and the way it's drawn, it was more detailed and not, it's like a, like chicken scratch on the first one, like you said, because that was just, it was like a 5-year-old drew that one, at least in my opinion.
You mean similar to some of my first thumbnails I did for the Bleeding Edge?
I haven't seen those, so. That one, it was like for the first two, that one definitely, stepped it up. And it got my attention a lot more compared to the first one.
All right. Excellent.
Mostly that. Yeah, that's about it for that.
Excellent. Yeah. So it looks like that Crispus Allen ends up becoming Spectra at some point. It becomes the host for Spectra after he's killed in one of the comics. He actually has only been around since 2000, it looks like here. And, He most recently was played in live action form in the Justice League film from the DCU, played by Cobna Haldbrook Smith. So I think that's interesting. Yeah, I didn't realize he was a familiar face, but thank you for those names there, Jeff. All right, Johnny, your thoughts, sir. Same question, please.
So this segment was definitely interesting. And fun fact, Ramirez actually showed up in The Dark Knight. She was the cop that Harvey interrogated.
Yes.
The woman cop.
Yep.
So I don't think she was in the comics before, but I guess I'm not too sure with a lot of the GCPD officers. So that's kind of interesting. I didn't even know that about Christopher Allen. So even more so. But I did like how it kind of continued because they were escorting the man in black. And they get caught up in a gang war, which, of course, if you're in Gotham, that happens. So it's definitely interesting to see the cops take on Batman and how basically Batman, like you had, what, Crispus Allen saying that He didn't think Batman was doing anything good, but Ramirez was saying that he's changed the city for the better. And just seeing the different dynamic between two different police officers, both not corrupted, which was a nice change of pace since they were Gordon's right-hand picked people. So it was definitely interesting to see their take on the situation and just seeing Batman swoop in the middle of a gang war that just popped out of nowhere, that they were just all hell breaking loose. So it was actually very great, good pacing. It didn't feel rushed, so that was much appreciated, because, I mean, with only a limited amount of time and trying to fit in the story, sometimes it can be really hard to do that.
Excellent. Thank you. All right. Jeff, sir. Same question, sir. Your thoughts on that segment? Yes, okay. Satan.
There you go. I just wanted to, wait until that that moment of us living in the movie Twister there for a moment passed. Anyways, no. Basically, to cross off of, I guess, probably what Johnny said, I felt like this was really the first one that really got me going, because I love the stereotypical tropes of Batman. I do. They never get old if they're done correctly. They never get old. They never get tired. You know, his I guess you could say relationship with the cops, how some of the cops, like, you know, let's say in the Batman film last year, right? With Pattinson. You had, you know, some cops wanted nothing to do with him. You know what I mean? They didn't want him involved on the scenes and whatnot and everything, right? And Gordon was putting himself out there by involving him in things in Batman Year Two. And so there is always, like, from my understanding, there's always been that type of, like, I'm not saying a 50-50 split, but there's always been people in the Gotham Police Department and whatnot and everything that have always suspected or not trusted Batman for multiple reasons. Some of them are jealous of him, right? They are. They like the fact that he's doing their job for them, right? And that he can do things that they can't do. He's like a mercenary, like a vigilante. And they can't play by his rules. And so I understand that. It makes sense to me to be handcuffed as a detective in a city like Gotham that's as tainted and fucking grimy at times as it is. It must suck to have to play by the rules as a cop, as a detective. Not be able to, like, just go just as hard as the criminals do, right? And mete out justice the same way they do on the streets, right? I have to imagine that after a while, if you really were an ethical police officer and whatnot, everything, you would get pretty pissed off at that whole dynamic. Then Batman shows up all of a sudden, he can just beat motherfuckers up and beat the shit out of them, half kill them and whatnot and everything, and just dump them in front of the police station, and nobody, it's whatever. It probably does frustrate. I imagine it probably would frustrate a lot of detectives. And then there's the fact that you're going to have your police officers they're not jealous. They just are ethically good cops and good detectives and whatnot that see Batman as being against the system, outside the law. And to them, that makes him unpredictable and unreliable and untrustworthy. So I just love the fact that this scene played out the way it did. The inner dialogue between the two detectives was the best part of the whole thing. I'm sorry, but it was better than the action, all of it. Their inner dialogue, some of the statements that the Ramirez woman makes, right, explaining why she trusts the Batman, like, you know, how for the first time in her entire time as a detective, she actually feels like she's doing good. You know what I'm saying? Like, she actually feels like she's making an impact. And, like, she's on the right side of the law and whatnot and everything, right? The corruption's gone. It's not gone, but it's not as bad. You know what I mean? And the fact that, you know, she said, I lived in this city my whole life, right? This is the safest it's ever been. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's improving. Things are getting better. You can see it. And I thought that some of the things that the other cop were saying were a little bit, like, out there, far-fetched. You know, saying that they're basically just, like, following the lead of this vigilante and being dictated by him and whatnot and everything and all that. That's not how Batman operates. You know what I'm saying? He doesn't treat the police like they're a bunch of clowns. You know what I mean? I've never seen him do that before in my life. I mean, that's just my take, Johnny. I could be wrong. Don't get me wrong. I don't remember him ever in anything I've ever seen actually, like, disrespecting, unless they were corrupt, decent cops. I've never seen him, like, abuse them verbally or anything or whatnot, or, you know, not respect them doing their jobs. Now, Dirty Krupp Cop's a different story. But well written, very well written. I thought the dialogue was excellent. Excellent writing. And we didn't need a lot of Batman in that segment. We didn't need much Batman, really, at all. But again, what other superhero do you know of, besides maybe like Spider-Man, that fights entire... And Spider-Man has superpowers. Batman doesn't. Batman fights multiple combatants all the time. All the fucking time he's wading into like 8, 9, 10 deep fights against 1-on-10. And he just, there's so many different reasons and combinations of why he's able to make that work. It's not just martial arts, you know, training and whatnot, and all the different fighting styles that he's operated and learned. It's not just the gadgets. It's not just, you know, Batman and the fact that he can withstand pain and take punishment. It's also the fact that he's strategic. He's good off the cuff. He can think. I've talked about this before. You can't fight multiple combatants without thinking ahead of time. You have to be able to think while you're fighting and watch your backside and whatnot and almost like, you know, predict people's, you know, reactions and what's going to happen during the battle, during the fight. You have to be real. I don't know what the right term is. Maybe you can tell me, Cyber or Johnny, but whatever that is that you have to have to be able to facilitate that and whatnot and be able to think ahead of that far. It's rare to have that ability. So I just think it's, you know, again, it's one of those things about Batman that always really impresses me is that he wades right through groups of dudes like 10, 12 step like high and just beats the shit out of them. Yeah. But he gets hit, though. He does get hurt, right? Every once in a while, you do see it. He gets popped here and there. And he does get stabbed and shit and whatnot and get hurt. And we see that later in the film.
Most definitely. Thank you.
Oh, wait. One last thing, too. The image. The shot of the two cars, the cops in the car. In the actual crossfire scene, awesome.
Cool. All right, Johnny, you have something you would like to add, sir.
So going off of what Jeff said, I don't think it was because I remember CRISPR was saying a bunch of stuff. I don't think it was the fact that he was ever disrespectful because Batman, of course, like you said, isn't disrespectful or doesn't beat any cops unless he's corrupt. But I think coming off of what CRISPR was saying, his perception was the fact that he was making the GCPD look bad because he's yes. doing the job that they should be doing, that he's cleaning up the streets, that people are going to be looking to Batman instead of the GCPD. I think that's where CRISPR was coming from with that perception and all that
stuff. You're right. You're right.
Because, I mean, like I said, he's not corrupt. And he was having these different opinions. I think it was just because of the fact that he feels like the Batman is doing this job that they should be doing. And the fact that he doesn't answer it to anybody makes him unpredictable.
Awesome. Thank you. All right. So, moving on. So, the next segment that was after this one, which is the third segment, was called Field Test. Now, in Field Test, this is when we get our first image of Lucius Fox. And this is when it really kind of brings it home to the Batman Begins, the Nolan trilogy, kind of that kind of feeling and stuff like that. This one really brings that home, I feel, really adding itself into that universe with this episode with Lucius Fox, most definitely because he was so popular in the other movies, especially when it came to creating gear for Batman and so forth. And so in this one, basically, Lucius helps Bruce basically create some sort of object to help him. And he basically, the episode's about him going out and testing it and seeing how it works. And basically throughout the episode, he gets into different scenarios, tests this thing out, and then ends up realizing he doesn't need it, that he needs to be the judge and not for this thing to judge for him. And that's pretty much what this segment was about. And I thought it was really done well. I really liked it. The animation in this one wasn't too shabby. I thought it was decent like the last one. But overall, I liked the whole concept of it. I liked the whole idea behind it. I thought it was interesting how the animation kind of gave a very Japanese-style anime feel to this one, especially when Batman was in full gear. And like it really was very – it looked very Japanese to me. And it definitely had that very much anime style to it, which was different than the previous two ones, I felt, and really honed in on giving you kind of that almost ninja feeling style type of like anime that, you know, they've made that I've seen in several films. Like it was almost along the lines of like Fist of the North Star, stuff like that. It kind of had that feeling to me. And it was definitely an interesting episode segment, I should say, that I thought was action packed and had an interesting story. And definitely kept you involved in the overall film itself and kept you entertained. So going around the panel, what were your guys' thoughts on this? And was there anything that you liked especially about it? And how would you compare it to the previous two segments? Starting with you, Andrew.
I like this one. This was my second favorite out of all of them. What I really, really liked about it was... when he was using the bullet and then it deflected and mortally wounded one of the other guys. And he's like, I don't want to use this no more because that's, you know, his rules of not killing. You know, I really like that because he's like, this is too dangerous. And, you know, like you said, he doesn't need it to get his jobs done. You know, it's just he's trying to, you know, beat ass, but he's not trying to kill or maim too terribly. No matter how bad the situation is. And like, yeah, with the animation style, he kind of looked like Light Yagami from Death Note a little bit. Because, you know, that the straight line, sharp line jaws for that type of animation. And yeah, like you said, the different scenarios he put himself into trying to test it out. But it's just, you know, when it came down to it, he made the right choice of not continuing to use something like that that is just far too dangerous. And it's, you know, like if that's an unpredictable, like a ability or a technology that, you know, it, maybe if you worked on it better, it could be improved. But at that point, you know, it's not ready for the field like that permanently and to be in his arsenal.
Excellent. Thank you. Johnny, same question, sir. Your thoughts?
So while the episode was pretty good, and I liked how they still continued with the gang rivalry in this one, especially with between the Russian and Sal Moroni, I am actually going to say this. I was not a fan of the depiction of the bat suit. It just, for me, felt a little too armory, kind of. Like especially the eyes, I just wasn't a big fan. But one thing I did find interesting was the fact that this kind of made Batman seem invincible. Like he can show up in front of you and you can shoot him with whatever you want, but it's not going to help. You're screwed either way.
Johnny, I don't mean to cut you off, but let me ask you a question. Did it occur to you at all when you were watching that maybe that's where they got the stuff from the Pattinson Batman with him with like all the armor?
I'm sorry, the what Batman?
The Batman with Pattinson last year? Where he was taking all those bullets all the time head on?
I don't think so, because in the comics, he actually wears a lot more armor. And in the Arkham Knight game, if you remember, he got a new suit, which was polymer that could take. And even in the Dark Knight, after he gets his new suit, he talked to Lucius and was like, hey, can you make me a new suit to take either more knives or bullets? And Lucius was like, sure, yeah. It can protect against knives, but it's going to be more susceptible to firearms. So I don't think that was the case for that one, for where they got the inspiration. Because even in the comics, Batman wore sometimes like really armored gear.
No, I get what you're saying. I don't have that much experience with DC. I just was wondering if maybe like that could have been something that could have been something that inspired where Matt Reeves went with in terms of like that whole approach of having Batman just taking on bullets like full on with a real, you know, with almost a bulletproof armor.
I know he took inspiration from Batman Year One. Honestly, with the way this bat suit looked, it kind of looked like Owlman, which is it looked more like Owlman than anything else, which was kind of interesting.
You mean for Watchmen?
No. You haven't got... It's Crisis on Two Worlds. I think it's the next animated film. Okay. But yeah, besides that, like I said, that was my only if with this suit. I did like seeing Lucius Fox in kind of still establishing that this was, hey, the world within Christopher Nolan. And it was, I'm just trying to imagine Batman trying to talk to a doctor about this dude. He's a Russian mobster and all that stuff. But one thing I will say is the fact that I loved how Bruce at the end was like, it works too well. Like, it works, but too well. And he wanted to make sure that every decision was made by him, which is kind of interesting because I guess it connects to the whole Dark Knight where he's using all the cell phones for like echolocation to locate the Joker.
Excellent. Thank you. All right. Jeff, your thoughts on the segment, please.
Yeah. Honestly, now we were talking about, of course, is this the Japanese sort of like Bruce Lee type segment?
It is the third segment, field test.
I got you. With B Train animating it. Yeah. And Cyber, I know that you mentioned that you're not a big fan of the anime type stuff and whatnot, which I totally respect that. I get it. Not everybody gets into anime. But I think this is interesting because I don't know a lot about this. But the fact that they actually decided at this point in 2008 to work with Japanese animators that do produce anime, right? And cross over it and whatnot and have them involved in this project, I think is very interesting and very unique. And I wonder if that was a precedent that they set, maybe. I wonder who else in the U.S. was working with those, had brought in these Japanese animated companies at all and brought them in and decided to let them to collaborate with them and whatnot on any projects before this. I'll look into it, for next show or whatever and whatnot, next animated, film or whatever. But it's interesting to me that combination. And that's one thing I would find interested in researching. Because again, everything that we see here is produced by Japanese animation studios. Studio 4°C, Madhouse, B-Train, and Production IG. Now I don't know that much about these companies, except maybe one that I know has produced an anime that I've watched. But either way, I like that collaboration. I do, that they did that and whatnot. And I wonder back then if that was kind of novel. But yeah, as far as the segment goes, I'd say it was probably, if I had to guess, I'd rank it fifth out of the six from top to bottom, below the first segment. Just in terms of the fact that, I guess, for one thing, I do like Lucius Fox. That was good. Like Johnny said, Lucius Fox, Andrew said, I like him I like him as a part of the Batman lore. I like them in the Nolan trilogy. I like Lucius Fox. And I liked him in the animated films I've seen, the Batman stuff I've seen so far on my own. And of course, his son, of course, becomes Nightwing and whatnot, right? Which we'll eventually get down the road. We're going to get to that. And I think that one's actually called Gotham Knights, not Gotham Knight. But essentially, I felt like it was a different... one thing I will say, it was a different tone, right? It really was. The way it started off with him kind of volunteering in a way, and I got vibes of like Daredevil. Netflix Daredevil, when he's like keeps that Russian mobster alive because he needs information from him. So he he works with the nurse friend or whatever, whatnot, to keep him alive while they're being like pursued by the police and all that and whatnot that are corrupt. I got like connections with vibes to that. But basically, the whole deal where basically, he attends, Bruce Wayne attends the charity golf tournament and everything and whatnot. I love the dichotomy of the Bruce Wayne versus Batman in this segment that I did enjoy. I like the contrast of the fact that Bruce Wayne was involved, right? And he used both counterparts, both his Bruce Wayne counterpart and his Batman counterpart to accomplish his goals. That I did find interesting. I find that interesting. I do. And basically, the action was good. When we did get some action and whatnot, and we did get some hand-to-hand and whatnot, it was typical Batman, throwing down. I don't know much about Blackgate Penitentiary. I'd like to know more about that. And I like the fact that Maroni was in this again, because I like Maroni. I think he's a good villain. I when he's done well in live action, he can be pretty solid. So, Besides that, I just, like I said, I like the fact that it was one of those deals where Batman actually has to keep a bad guy alive, right? Essentially to, you know, save the world, save Gotham, or like, you know, or to do his job. So, you know, that leaves Batman in a position where he's got to like take care of somebody who's a villain, a bad guy. So I like to see that anytime you've got to take a villain or a bad guy, and the superhero has to work with him, or like protect him or her. I like that dichotomy.
Cool. Excellent. Thank you. All right. So moving on. So the next segment, which was the fifth segment, is called In Darkness Dwells. Ooh, Darkness Dwells. Ooh. So In Darkness Dwells, basically in this segment, I think this was actually my favorite of the six segments. Because we got Killer Croc and Scarecrow in this segment, which was really awesome. Absolutely loved it. And basically, this one's about Batman having to basically track down Scarecrow and Killer Croc and take care of them. And basically, it's kind of like what, you know, things are going on. A priest is kidnapped by Killer Croc, by a reptile-looking creature. And then as Batman's investigating, figuring out why this priest was, you know, basically captured, we end up finding out that Scarecrow is behind the whole thing, and it's, you know, Batman's got to basically stop, you know, Scarecrow from leeching hell on Earth, basically. And so we basically go through the segment. We have a lot of great action. We get to see Scarecrow quite a bit. We get to see Killer Croc at one point, and we get some really great kind of like thoughts and stuff like that, and that are just really fun and really enjoyable. And I just thought that the animation of this one, I thought was really cool. I liked how it looked. I liked how it presented itself. And I just thought the whole idea behind it was really done well. And to reiterate there, this is actually the fourth segment. Sorry, people. Fourth segment, not the fifth, of this six-part segment. And I just thought it was really fun and really enjoyable. So going around the table, what is people's thoughts on this segment? What did you enjoy about it? What did you like about it? And just kind of your overall thoughts on this segment, starting with you, Andrew.
Yeah, this is the one where he was fighting Killer Croc, and then he was saying he must have the, you know, crane's, what is it, his juice or whatever was, like, burning inside of his body. And when he punched him right in the mouth and went in there and ripped the thing out of him, yeah, that was really well done. You know, this was more dark, gritty. That's what I prefer, you know, that's how Batman kind of is, you know. I prefer it to be more dark and sinister type. You know, like his Batman Forever was more like comic book comedy, you know, joking and more bright and vibrant. But this one, you know, it showed him sulking around, the rain, you know, just the dark and him, you know, he just seemed sad throughout the whole segment of that one. You know, and he was just fighting his heart just to, you know, do what he best can to get the job done. You know, and but we also got our first peek of Alfred in there too, also, right? I believe.
Yep.
Yes. Yep.
You know, it's always good to see Alfred around trying to help him, you know, telling him, you know, getting him back, his head back in the game, getting a focus.
No, I agree with you, Andrew. Every time that they started to add in some of the classic characters and whatnot and everything, it just made things better.
Yeah, definitely. You know, it adds, you know, more originality to the series, and, you know, it wouldn't be Batman without those appearances, at least. You know, they only have to have a lot of screen time, but just them popping up for the short little bit helps a whole lot.
Are you a fan of Scarecrow or Killer Croc?
Oh, of course.
How did you see them in this? Did you like how they presented them? Did you like how they looked? Or do you think it was, you know, anywhere on par with what the comics looked like?
They took it away and they just did their own like version of it. It was nice to see something different than the same, you know, the same look every time that you get for most of the cartoons. You know, Scarecrow really doesn't change that much in the animated movies. You know, Killer Croc, I mean, well, he's just a big croc. You know, not too much you could really change about him, except maybe his skin color or how big his claws are, or, you know, or how vicious he really is, you know, because he'll eat and slice and dice, whatever. You know, he has no preference. But no, I think they portrayed him very well in this, and it was just nice to see another little variety of it.
I don't mean to jump in, but am I the only one that was shocked at how quickly he knocked, like, he vanquished Killer Croc? It was just like, bam.
He did that a lot.
Well, I mean, he figured out what was going on right away, so, you know, it's Batman for you.
Yeah.
No.
Well, don't forget, too, the segments are so short, they have to make it quick, too. Yeah. So that's another reason probably why, too. Because they didn't have time. And, like, if the whole, you know, movie had been about him subduing Croc and subduing Scarecrow, then I'm sure that would have been more expanded, most definitely.
No, it just seems to me like if Killer Croc really is 350, 360 pounds, or not all that shit and whatnot, that he would be a lot more formidable to throw down with and whatnot than he was. That's all. But I get what you're saying, though. I do.
Excellent. All right. Thank you, Andrew. Johnny, same question, sir. Thoughts?
So I find one thing I loved was seeing Nunez and CRISPR and Nunez again. I thought I really enjoyed them coming back. One thing I did find interesting and I really liked was the fact that they actually connected more to the movie because they talked about the doctor who escaped into the Narrows, the one from the Batman Begins movie. So I did like that. One thing I will say is the fact that this is Batman's first time fighting a super-powered villain. Because Killer Croc, if you think about it, Bane in the movie, he wasn't super-powered. The Joker wasn't super-powered. Ra's al Ghul was not super-powered at all. So this was his first time, so it was kind of cool. I did like how they went into a brief history of Killer Croc to give the audience something, but it wasn't too long until Killer Croc came in and surprise attacked him. I will say one thing I did love, and I don't think it's been stated, it was the dynamic between Gordon and Batman. Because they were going back and forth with the earpieces. I did like that, especially at the end where Gordon offered to help and he was like, no, I'm good. And he flew back into the night. So that was one of the highlights of this episode. Of course, besides the animation was beautiful, especially when it came to the fighting scenes. It felt very fluid.
Awesome. Thank you. Jeff, your thoughts, sir, please.
Yeah. I mean, very simply, I think everybody basically kind of already said quite a bit about what there is to say about it. Like I said, I would have liked to have seen, personally, I just would like to have seen that engagement with Killer Croc to be a little bit more longer. I didn't feel like we got, I mean, basically, if I understood it correctly, when Killer Croc bit Batman right from jump, when he kind of stuck out of that wall or whatever, the sewer, he had the toxin, right, from Scarecrow somehow infused in his bite. So at that point, Batman's visuals were automatically messed up and whatnot from the toxin. And so when he was seeing Killer Croc, he was seeing him all distorted and whatnot and, like, you know, Scarecrow style and shit and whatnot. I wanted to see what Killer Croc really looked like. Like, you know, like what type of version that they depicted him as. He's such an, I mean, like Johnny said, I mean, I didn't realize that. I thought Bane was augmented in some way. I did. I always thought that Bane was in some way augmented, at least with his strength or something like that. I always assumed he was, but that's good to know, Johnny, that he's not.
Well, not in the film. In comics, he is. He uses Venom, but it wasn't shown in the film.
Okay, then. It is the Venom. I remember now correctly. Okay. No, but with Killer Croc, that's what I'm saying. He's just such an interesting villain because he is like almost like unearthly almost, you know, like he's like a mutant. And you don't get to see Batman fight shit like that very often. You know what I'm saying? You don't get to see him fight something like that. He's always fighting people, right? Hand to hand and shit like that and whatnot, with guns and things like that and whatnot. You don't see him take on like actual creatures very often, at least not in my experience. We can get into like the Batman Predator stuff and whatnot at some point in another show and whatnot. That'd be something we should cover, Cyber. Some of that Batman Predator shit is pretty deep, pretty dope. But that'd be a fight I'd love to watch. Batman and the Predator throwing down. That would be pretty dope. Good segment. I love Scarecrow. He's always positive. I always think he's always great. If anything, I thought that they probably could have done more with him in the Nolan trilogy. I felt like they really minimized his role a lot. Go ahead, Johnny.
Oh, I was yawning.
Oh, I apologize.
I guess I do have something to add. If you want to see Batman versus Predator, they do have a comic book line.
That's what I'm referring to. No. I mean like live action. I'd love to see it live action. Like, you know what I'm saying? That's what I meant. I haven't read it, but I've watched some YouTube videos that explain those comics. I'm really into the Predator alien stuff, the Dark Horse stuff.
Marvel owns them now.
Marvel owns them now. Yeah, there you go. Marvel owns them now. Isn't that crazy? Marvel owns aliens. They own Predator and all that shit. And hey, Cyber, I guess that's why the Predator was in Wakanda Forever, right?
There you go.
That's why. But no, I found that interesting. Plus, you gotta have a set of balls on you, man. To go into the, like Andrew was saying, to go into the fucking sewer in the dark to begin with, to be hunting down something like that, that's 8 foot tall or whatever, weighs 360 pounds, and you're just like on your own and shit, whatnot, just you on the thing with Gordon. Like, I'd be scared shitless to go hunt that thing down. Not know what the hell to expect or what to even, like, it can even do. Batman's got balls of steel, baby. He ain't scared of nothing.
True that. I completely agree. I mean, as I was saying earlier while watching Batman versus Superman, I was saying, you got to admit, Batman is one badass person because he is one of the few that has no powers that still kicks butt and stays up with those powered people. So I completely agree there. Big balls.
He physically had to work years and years and years and train his body to be a top physical peak of what you can put your body through to be able to withstand standing up to the things that he does. That's dedication. He might don't have a lot of money, but I mean, he dedicated his whole, adulthood training and going everywhere to learn every possible thing he could, to perfect his craft. So that's, I respect Batman as a character like that.
No, and I respect the fact that Nolan actually, I forget, Cyber, Johnny, Andrew, did the Nolans do the Batman trilogy, or was it just Nolan?
Just Nolan.
Okay.
Just Christopher Nolan.
No, I'm just asking, because I know on Interstellar, they both wrote it and whatnot and everything. Him and his brother and everything and whatnot wrote that.
Yeah, no, it's just Christopher.
Okay. No, I thought it was great that they at least like paid service to that, the Batman trilogy. They at least paid service to his training.
Awesome. All right. So, coming to the fifth segment of this 1 hour and 15-minute long film is called Working Through the Pain. So, what Andrew was talking about, him having to be in physical pitch-perfect perfection, having to work at it, that's perfect going into this segment. So, this segment, basically, we see Bruce, he's down in the sewer cell after he was injured by Killer Croc. And that's the one thing about these last three segments, they all are kind of semi-related, which was really fun. So I thought that made the film even better, and what made these last few segments really fun. And so he's in there, and he basically solders his wound after being shot accidentally by some scared person down in the sewer. And basically, the rest of the episode is about him trying to get out of the sewer and basically reminiscing about him learning how to deal with his pain. And we do a lot of flashbacks. We get flashbacks to these different people he meets that help him learn how to feel through the pain, like getting hit by a bottle or getting hit by something or anything happening to him that'll physically hurt him. He can mentally block that pain and still move on. And I thought this was an interesting episode, a segment, I should say. I thought the whole concept was interesting. I thought it was fun showing him kind of doing his training, having some training that he's learned over the years, and kind of him showing you what he went through to be able to get to the peak that he is at and how he's able to deal with what he deals with as he's fighting against these metahumans. So I think that was a really cool concept with this. I liked the animation in this one. I thought it was interesting. And I thought that overall, the whole story was just a really cool little segment. And I just really enjoyed it. So going around the panel, what did you guys think of this segment? Did you enjoy it? Did you like it? And just your overall thoughts, starting with you, Andrew.
Yeah, this would be the third favorite out of all of them. You know, yeah, it was nice to see the different, you know, when he was training with the woman, you know, walking on the hot coals, you know, laying on the beds and needles, stuff like that, just to give you a kind of an idea of what he was training and what he, you know, what he had used to get to that point. It was nice to see. And like with the animation, you said, yeah, it was nice and clean, you know. It was a, how do I say it? I can't think of the word at the moment. But, you know, like the animation, like I said, it was just, it was well done. You know, it was colorful. You know, it was drawn well, proportionate stuff. It wasn't, you know, over the top tweaky or like in the first one, you know, like it was just how it had that, I don't know, like weird. Everything was unproportioned, but I'm sorry, I got something in my throat. No,
it happens, it happens to the best of us, brother.
Yeah, sorry. But yeah, no, him meeting that woman and her training him, and then he sees her getting beat down by a group of guys, and she's sitting there taking him like it was nothing, and then he goes in there and she's watching him being able to take the same punishment and then being able to take them out with his martial arts. And then she's like, you know, it's time for you to go now. Like, you've passed me the ability to be able to endure this pain. You know, that was nice to see, you know, be like, you're good. You learned it. You know, you mastered this. It's time to go. And then, you know, it cuts back to being him in the sewer at the, you know, he's sitting at the bottom of the sewer, and Alfred's like, you know, put your hand down to come out to see. He's like, well, I can't. He's got all the guns. That kind of made me laugh a little bit. But that was very well written, I believe, too. Yeah, it was a good story on that one.
Excellent. Thank you. All right, Johnny, your same question, sir.
This was actually my least favorite segment. Just because it just felt very generic with the training montage, going with, just the training, the hot coals, the montage. I mean, some of the action, the animation was fantastic. I just felt like it could have connected more with the lady being maybe Lady Shiva, who trained Batman in the comics. It just felt very generic to me. And I mean... Yeah, that's all I'll say. It just felt very generic.
All right. Okay. Excellent. Mr. Jeff, same question, sir.
I loved it. I loved the Bruce Lee vibe to it. I did. I don't know, you know. I mean, you tell me. I felt like that they kind of like Asianed up Bruce Wayne in a way. He did look Asian. Let's be honest here. Like, you know, the haircut and everything, whatnot and all that, which I'm fine with. I don't have a problem with that. What's wrong with that? You know, like it didn't bother me. I don't see why there's anything wrong with it. It's animation, right? Like you're supposed to be able to expand boundaries and try different things and push different, you know, genres. If there's one type of like, you know, field of you know, where I guess of you know, of content or this type of art, you know what I mean, and whatnot, I would think that animation would be the one place where you can take chances and there'd be less of the, you know, people attacking you for not being PC enough, or, you know, attacking you for taking chances and whatnot. I would always think that animation would be a place to do those things, to, like, you know, try different things like gender swap a character or racial, you know, change the race of a character and whatnot, and make it work. So it's not a big deal. It shouldn't be a problem. Again, it's animation. No, I thought there was a really interesting, profound. I mean, again, this, we all have our own opinions here. I respect Johnny's. That's what makes The Bleeding Edge what it is, right? Is our opinions. It's what, it's what drives a lot of our discussions. You know, some of our best discussions end up coming out of our different opinions. You know, shit. I'm still waiting and looking forward to, like, what Johnny and Cyber and Andrew and everybody and Jasmine and everybody think about everything that came out of Phase 4 in the MCU. I'm still waiting for the ranking shows, baby. I got to set them up. But nah, I like the girl, the chick that taught him, that tried to work with him and train him and whatnot and everything. I thought she was great. Whoever voiced her was excellent. Great character. You know, I thought that the writing in that segment was outstanding. The story was great. And basically, you know, essentially, I'm trying to figure out the name of that character was and who voices her. Oh, okay, I got it.
Cassandra
and it's Carmen
Nagra.
Yes. No, she was great. I loved how, well, on one hand, I was like, when she was saying, like, you know, I failed you, you know, like I tried to help your pain, but like, you know, that's not really your issue. I think he just needed to get laid. Right. Batman just needed to hit that shit. You know what I'm saying? Like, that was the problem. You know, and that was like the cure. That's what he really needed, like, to get to make happen. But of course, it didn't happen, unfortunately. But it was dope as shit that, like, the dude right off the jump hit him with that bat, and it just crushed over his head, and he didn't even flinch. I loved it. That was freaking awesome. That's so Batman. The other dude hits him with the bottle, doesn't even flinch. You know, just whatever. You know what I mean? And I thought that it was kind of prophetic in a way. It was very Batmanish. When you go into the dark side of Batman and Bruce Wayne, his pain from what happened to his parents, and how it's just always going to affect his life. I don't think Batman can be happy. I don't think Bruce Wayne is able to be happy ever again in life. He cannot experience that. He can maybe feel fulfillment or contentness or whatever, but he cannot feel happiness. Right? I just don't think it's possible for him. And I connect with him on that level. I do. And that's what she was talking about, is that he has that side in him where he has that animalistic side where he does want to hurt people at times, right? And Batman will deceive people. He will. He will manipulate people at times. As Bruce Wayne, as Batman, he'll manipulate people to get what he needs to get done, to do his job. He will. He'll do it from time to time. He still cares about people. He still protects people. But he has goals. And at times he feels like he's got to do what he's got to do to make them happen. You know, so, you know, I just thought what she said to him at the end there, if I could almost replay it, it'd be perfect. It was very prophetic in the terms of the fact that she failed him because, you know, he really didn't show up there to learn how to deal with pain. He can deal with pain and hurt. His hurt is something that she can't help him with, right? That's where she failed him.
Thank you. Excellent. All right. So that brings us to the final segment of this film, which happens to be called Deadshot. And if you can guess why it's called Deadshot, you're a genius. But anyways, this episode is called Deadshot, simply the fact that Deadshot is in this. Oh, yeah. So, basically, this episode is basically Batman comes in contact with Deadshot and basically has to stop him from, you know, basically getting away with what he's been paid to do. Because we all know he's a, you know, mercenary for hire and all that kind of stuff, so that's basically what it does. And through this little segment, basically, we get kind of a good idea of this version of a Deadshot. We see Deadshot shooting, doing his, you know, deadshotting that he does so well. And we see him and Batman fight and all kinds of, like, just really cool action-y stuff going on. And I thought this was a pretty decent segment, too. I enjoyed it. I liked that we got to see Deadshot. I thought that they did a good job bringing it to life and giving us this really solid little segment that worked really well. I thought it was overall just really well done. And I really enjoyed how it first showed Deadshot, him sitting up in that carnival rider, that Ferris wheel, taking a shot. I thought it was really cool too as well. And I appreciated what they did with this episode. And once again, we got Crispus Allen in this short or the segment too as well. We had Pennyworth Alfred pop up again in this one. And then we also had a brief encounter with Martha Wayne too as well in this one in a flashback, which I thought was really cool. Really solid little segment. And I thought a good way of ending this film as well. And I thought that it did really good. So going around the panel, what were your thoughts on this final segment, and how do you feel overall the whole film was? Starting with you, Andrew.
Well, this was, you know, my favorite out of the whole anthology, definitely. I like the fact that when, you know, he was using Gordon to draw out Batman, you know, because it was initially his target, and what was it? What's his name? Yeah, Ronald Marshall was the one that hired Deadshot, you know, for the assassination attempt. But you know, as Batman deflected a bullet from Gordon, and he reveals like, "Aha, you were my initial target." And then when Deadshot thinks he got Batman when he fell off the train and he showed up behind him, how scared he got, and he basically shit in his pants. that kept me well entertained for that. You know, it's just like. Because he thinks he's such a badass, but then, you know, once he's on the loose, then he just cowers. He's cowered like a little child. It was beautiful to see, you know. And then also after, you know, Alfred at the end, you know, telling him, like, you know, you're definitely made for a higher purpose, you know, that's why you're here doing what you do, you know. And then at the end, him staring up and seeing that bat signal was just really nice and symbolic, like, you know. He knows his true path and what he needs to do, and that's how he is. And that's he's going to keep doing the way he has to save Gotham. It was also nice that he was like, I've been trying to stop those two bullets my entire life.
Yeah.
Once he killed his parents, you know, that was pretty deep. But yeah,
awesome.
And overall, I really, really enjoyed it. You know, it's like going into it, I thought it was just a movie, you know. Then I got the anthology, which surprised me, and then I can say I really enjoyed this. I'd probably give this, you know, about an 8 out of 10.
All right, thank you. Johnny, same question, sir.
So this is one of my top three favorite segments. I did love the fact that Deadshot actually pushed Batman, because this was one of the very few people he faced that wasn't just, oh, it's just a superpowered strong person, or he has to get up and personal with the fear toxin or whatever. This was a highly trained assassin who was able to manipulate bullets and basically just kill anybody and almost never misses, to the point where Batman was the first one. I did like the fact that it was kind of like a cat and mouse trying to get to that part of the train. And when he did, he was using the batarangs. He was basically fighting him. The flashbacks with Martha, Alfred, I really did enjoy everything. It was definitely a great way to basically send off and close out the anthology series by having it all come together in one action packed. And of course, at the end with him staying, I've always been chasing those two bullets. I thought it was fantastic. For this one, I'll give it a 8.5. for the overall segments. Like I said, I really enjoyed it being an anthology series. I thought it was really great to kind of expand the Nolanverse, and even those little tidbits of it connecting to Batman Begins was really nice. I wished it would have kind of hinted at the Joker being behind the scenes in some of these things, especially since it's going into the Dark Knight. That would have been really fun. Not even like someone voicing the Joker, maybe like a silhouette in the background.
Excellent. Thank you. Jeff, same question, sir.
Yeah, you know, very much mirroring what Andrew said. I was pleasantly surprised by what I ended up getting out of this. I did not expect this sort of anthology, multi-segment kind of deal and whatnot, but it ended up being very interesting. nice change, nice surprise, right? You know, and honestly, at that point, what can I say, really? I mean, it would be tough for me to I guess, to pick a top three out of the six. Easier for me to probably pick an N3. And the final segment, essentially for me, I believe was not, it wasn't like, it didn't deflate anything for me or whatnot and everything. It didn't take anything away from, I mean, I love Deadshot. I love the fact that they did inject Deadshot into this and whatnot and everything because, honestly, I wasn't even aware that I was not expecting to see Deadshot in this at all. I remember hearing his name, I think, at one point in one of the segments. I remember hearing his name mentioned. But I didn't actually expect to see Deadshot pop up. And so seeing him go at Batman was really interesting. Because like Johnny said, I mean, Deadshot's no joke, right? Like, what does Waller say or whatever? Or somebody say in Suicide Squad that he's actually the only supervillain that's ever killed Superman? Or whatever? Or something like that or some shit?
I don't remember.
Yeah. I think she's...
You're thinking of the second one, and he put Idris Elba's character, and he put him in the ER, different okay. character.
Yes, okay, yeah. No, oh, yeah, you're right. That wasn't Deadshot. That was, well, whatever the hell his name is. You know what I'm talking about. Either way, good movie, by the way, and whatever his character was, he was really damn good at it. But no, Deadshot is great. I love him. He reminds me a little bit of Bullseye from the Daredevil comics, in a way, right? Except he uses guns, right? And, of course, Bullseye doesn't do guns. At least not that I can remember. I think he's always – everything is always projectiles and things like that and whatnot. Or hand-to-hand. I love villains like that, that rely on things like, you know, like extreme accuracy, right? Like, you know, he can pick up any object and make it into a weapon kind of deal. Deadshot's not exactly that, but if I remember correctly, Deadshot can basically, if he can use any weapon, you can give him basically any gun, and he's accurate like as fuck with it. Well, now, was it in this segment or was it the segment before Bloodsport where Batman actually mentions, this was poignant to me, Batman mentions to Alfred how he appreciates a gun, what a gun can do. The power of a gun, right? Was that in this segment?
That was in this segment.
Yeah, no, I thought that was really, really, really impactful for me. Really good writing. Really good conversation. To hear Batman reflect on, like, what a gun means to him. The power. And then he finishes off and he says that it makes you God, right? And it just kind of, it's a deep dive into the psychology of Batman. / Bruce Wayne and how he views these things, right? I never heard Batman talk about guns before till then. What he thought about them, you know, whatever, like, you know, how he viewed them. I never heard him talk about it. That was very new to me. So it actually, and it makes sense to when you think about it, for Batman to actually hold a gun and maybe almost feel a sense of, like, jealousy in a way that he can't use them himself, right? Even though, if you think about it, they'd aid him very well in what he does. They'd be useful tools to him, right? It'd make his job a lot easier if he just used some guns once in a while instead of just fighting hand-to-hand to motherfuckers. You know what I'm saying? It certainly, you know, make things go quicker, you know, but and he'd get hurt less. So it was interesting, that dichotomy, the fact that he actually does respect guns. He sees the power in guns. From a psychological place, from a mental place, with the weight. He even mentioned how he enjoys the weight of a gun in his hand, right? People who like guns say that. I don't know much about guns, but I know people from where I'm in New York, where I'm from, they say things like that. They like the feeling of the weight of a certain gun in their hand. I don't know what that feels like. I've never felt that experience with a gun in my hand, personally. I only care about how the weight affects how I can shoot it. But you know, either way, I thought that itself was the most poignant part of that whole segment, was that dialogue itself. And I felt like, for me, characters like Alfred, they humanize Batman. They're the only characters in the Batman world that humanize him and where he's willing to be vulnerable in front of them. Think of Rachel in the Nolan trilogy, right? Rachel humanized him, right? There's only certain characters that can do it with Batman. And Alfred's one of them where you could, Batman will be vulnerable with Alfred. And so I just think it's important with Batman. He has to be grounded to some extent. He can't be the Dark Knight all the time. He can't always be that person. So it's nice. For me, I just wanted to mention that that's one of the reasons why I care so much about these secondary characters and why I feel like their additions are always positive for me with Batman, is that they ground him. They give him layers.
Excellent. And what is your rating, sir, for the overall film?
I'll give it a 9.5.
Wow. Wow. 9.5. Wow.
The concept itself, impressive. The concept itself, the way it was done and whatnot, and everything was wonderful.
Excellent. Yeah, I think that the overall stories were really done well. I just once been a huge fan of several of the animation segments. So I give it a solid 6 out of 10. I think that it's worthy of a 6 based on just story alone. Just like you were saying, Jeff, I think that the stories were really done well.
Yeah. As opposed to Thor Love and Thunder, where I wish I could go back to that show and redo it so I could give it a 1.75.
I stand by my rating on that film. I still think it's fun. All right. Okay, so that is the end of that film, people. We have finished Batman Gotham Knight. All right. So, like I said, that's the end of that film. We'll go around, let everyone say if they have anything they'd like to say, and then we'll get the hell out of here, people. All right. So, Andrew, do you have anything that you'll be working on anytime soon, sir, or anything you'd like to share?
But I'll probably be doing some reactions with Jazz. I'll probably be doing some more stuff with Jeff on the side. So, you know, and, I'll be doing more of these Fridays with you guys. So as long as, you know, you guys tell me ahead of time what I need to watch, I'll be ready and prepared. So I'm excited for that. You know, I'm just starting to get my groove in this, you know, just trying to find my niche. But I'm having a lot of fun doing this with you guys, so.
We appreciate you, Andrew. You're doing a great job, man.
Excellent, sir. Excellent. Thank you. All right. Johnny, sir, would you like to plug your stuff, sir?
Well, as always, if you guys liked what I say, you can always look me up at Fuent Chat with Johnny Fuent, wherever you hear podcasts, whether it be Stitcher, Spotify, Google Music, Apple Podcasts. I am there. We're going to be going on episode 38. We're almost at 50 soon, so that should be fun. And yeah, it's going to be, it's definitely going to be interesting. Going to be trying to team up with both of you to try to do my Ant-Man review. So it should be fun. One thing I will say is, this upcoming episode, I'm going to be talking about Deceased issue number 6, which I'm personally super excited for. Tom Taylor is one of my favorite writers, and he just revealed he's going back to the world of Injustice with Superboy issue number 1. So, going to be very interesting stuff to talk about.
Now, Fuent, for one thing, why was I not brought in or mentioned or asked if I wanted to come on and talk about the new DC slate with you?
What are you talking about?
The Gun Saffron slate.
Are you talking about the Rise and Fall of the DCU?
Yes.
That was early in December. That was in December.
Okay.
The DC
Feast.
Yeah, that was just me going over just kind of simply just explaining who the characters were. That wasn't like a review. That wasn't like a review. That was just me saying, hey, so like if you listen to the episode, I go into detail of who the Monster Squad is. Like going into the comic lore of it and stuff like that.
Like, it wasn't like a reaction thing. It was just going into the nitty gritty on the comic, like the comic background on them. Like how they were a World War II kind of pre-Suicide Squad. Dr. Frankenstein, Dr. Phosphorus is actually who the Batman Beyond Blight character is based upon. And how this is going to be taking place in the modern world of the new DCEU. Because it's going to have Amanda Waller calling on these guys. And the biggest fact of all is the fact that all the voice actors for all these projects that are animated are going to be playing their live action
characters. Live action. Yeah.
So yeah, no, I was just going over the comic book
lore. When give us an idea. When are you planning on doing this Ant-Man review?
I'll get back to you guys because I'm getting my wisdom teeth removed next week. So it's going to be a little bit.
Okay. No problem. Don't forget about us.
All right. Thank you, Johnny. Good luck with the wisdom teeth. All right. And then, of course, if you enjoy me here on the MCU's Leading Edge, definitely check out my solo content, people. You can find me under Cybernetic Shark under YouTube. You can find me on Facebook, Instagram, Rizzle, Twitter, everywhere you can find me. Anything under Cybernetic Shark, you'll find me. I just released today my review of Knock at the Cabin. So go and check that out, or you can check out another most recent, my Avatar, The Way of Water review as well. That is up there for you guys. And most definitely check that out. I'll be having another review up tomorrow for you guys as well. I can't remember which one that will be, but it will be one of the ones I've recently worked on. And just keep your eyes out for my Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumanium review, which will be up in the next week or so.
Gee, Cyber, looks like you like a lot of Band-Aid, man.
Apparently, I guess so.
Damn.
And as you can see, I'm at 563 people, and slowly making it away up there. So I appreciate you guys, and thank you guys for hanging out and checking out my stuff. So yeah. What do you got going on for Sunday, Jeff, sir?
Sunday, we have Jeremiah, the teacher / writer from New Jersey, who likes to come on and fucking outdo me on the shows and whatnot and everything and make me look bad and whatnot because he's so damn good as a guest. Jeremiah is such a good goddamn guest that any guest should want to be in the show with him. So I'll have Jasmine, I'll have Jeremiah, and probably two or three other people on to discuss Echo, the Disney Plus series, and tie into Daredevil Born Again. And that'll be the show right there. Right? And then, of course, next Wednesday, 9:35 p.m. Eastern, 6:35 p.m. Pacific, folks, The Last of Us Episode 7, I believe. Right? We're reviewing. Yep. I apologize. We already took a loss, a hit on our views on our Last of Us Episode 6 review because I put Episode 2 on the thumbnail. Great job, as usual, Cyber. I did a great job with that. Putting it as episode 2 really helped, I think, a lot with the views and whatnot, you know? Which is why we're only at like 28 on it so far, when normally we'd already be 1,000, over 1,000 by now. But since we already reviewed episode 2, people probably aren't that interested. You know? What a surprise. And, I'll change it. I'm fixing it tonight. It's only inserting a 6 into a 2. I can handle it. That I can at least do. But we have, I believe, next Friday. Oh, wait, when does Mandalorian start here, Cyber? Is it next week?
Next Friday.
So are we doing the review on Friday?
Yep.
All right, so there we go. Friday the 1st, 9:35 p.m. Eastern, 6:35 p.m. Pacific, we review episode 1 of The Mandalorian Season 3.
The first is Wednesday.
Oh, so fuck!
It's Wednesday, not Friday.
We're shifting The Last of Us to Friday.
Yes, we're shifting The Last of Us Friday. So next week will be Mandalorian on Wednesday, and then next Friday will be The Last of Us Episode 7.
Now me and Cyber are both all fucking discombobulated over here, man. This is not good, folks. This is not good. When Cyber and I are both all fucked up, that's not positive for the MCU's Bleeding Edge. Johnny, you might have to start chipping in more, man. If Cyber and I can't even keep track of shit, somebody's going to have to, like, step in.
Well, Johnny thought Friday was the first, so that's why we were thinking it was the first.
Yeah, I was there too, so maybe not.
Wednesday. It's Wednesday.
Cyber, you had me tripping there for a minute, Cyber. You really did. You had me tripping, man. I'm like, I something doesn't seem right.
You're always tripping. What are you talking about?
I was tripping. I was like, I swear to God, I thought we were doing the Mandalorian on Wednesdays. I was like, oh shit.
We are.
All right, so there you go. Episode 1 on Wednesday, right? And then Last of Us on Friday, which may actually work out good for us because you know what? There might be some guests that can come on Friday for the Last of Us that might not be able to do Wednesdays with us normally.
There we go. Right?
Like Andrew from GNN that wants to be on the show for one of the episodes.
Yep.
So there you go. I'm sure Johnny Fuente will make an appearance between at some point. No, I'm saying before the finale. I'll definitely make sure I at least invite you for the finale, Johnny.
All right, looking forward to it. Well, I'll talk to you guys later, and I hope you really like Left Behind because it's going to be a roller coaster.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, man.
All right, see ya.
All right, brother, take care.
Okay. All right, people, we are out of here too. We'll see you next time, people.
Sorry about that, brother. My bracelets keep getting stuck in things.